You guys can have a seat. As I said, we are going to be continuing our series on the Sermon on the Mount. And originally, Greg gives me a text, and it was actually supposed to be Matthew chapter 5, 21 through 30. He gave me the text of do not murder and do not commit adultery. And so I was struggling with that, and Rana, I believe it was Rana, told me, just say, do not commit adultery and you will not get murdered. And end of sermon. But I talked my way out of it, and we're just going to be dealing with Matthew chapter 5, 21 through 26, if you want to go ahead and turn there. And Greg will cover the latter next week, or in 2 weeks, sorry. There's this ancient Jewish legend about two brothers who live on farms right next to each other. One of the brothers was about mid-30s, he had a family, had a wife, had a couple of kids. And the other brother, he was a younger brother, he was late teens, early 20s, just kind of getting started out in life. But they live right next to each other on these farms. Now these brothers, they loved each other very much. They loved God, they were God-fearers, they were overall just really good men. Now these brothers, they start having similar thoughts about each other. The older brother was looking over at the younger brother and he thought, man, he has so much responsibility. He has so much to take care of. If something were to ever happen to him, what would he do? So what the older brother does is he wakes up in the middle of the night, he goes to his grain bin, he fills up a bin as much as he can carry, and he goes over to the younger brother's farm, opens his grain bin, and he dumps a bin of grain in there, and he goes to his house and goes to bed in the middle of the night. Around this same time, the younger brother starts having similar thoughts. He looks at his older brother, and he goes, man, he has so much to take care of, his family, his wife, his kids. It's my responsibility to try and help him. And so what he does is he wakes up in the middle of the night, he gets a grain bin, fills it up as much as he can carry, goes to the older brother's farm, and he dumps the grain into his bin. This happens for weeks, it happens for months, not aware of what each other was doing until one night when they were doing this, they happened to run into each other. They realized what was going on, and they dropped their grain bags and embraced. Now, according to the legend, God looked down at this moment and said, on this spot where these brothers manifest such love, I will build my temple because my presence is most clearly manifested when people take care of each other in my name. Now, I love this legend. I don't think it's a historically accurate legend. Nobody really does. But it does show us a really important truth, that God's presence is most clearly shown when people take care of one another in his name. And that's the truth that we're going to be talking about today. Let me put it a little bit differently. We cannot enjoy peace with God without pursuing peace with other people. Church, are you with me? Yeah. We cannot enjoy peace with God without pursuing peace with other people. If we want to be people who enjoy this reconciling relationship that God has made available to us, we will also be people who pursue reconciliation with people all around us. Now, I do have to be honest with you this morning. I do have a fear that no voice in our world is more consistently ignored than that of Jesus's. Maybe that's a little bit dramatic, but I don't think it is by much. That no voice in our world is more consistently not listened to than his, and I fear that the biggest culprits of this are us, followers of Jesus, Christians. People who say yes to Jesus, but then I fear sometimes don't pay attention to what Jesus says. I hope this isn't dramatic, but as I've been reading through the words of Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, I can't escape this question. This question of the things that Jesus is telling us to do, do they match with the things that we routinely do on a daily basis? And sometimes I don't like that answer. Now, I'm not trying to be harsh toward you. I'm not trying to be harsh toward anyone. And if I am, forgive me, but I'm haunted by the recognition of this gap between how we are supposed to live versus how we actually live. And I'm haunted by this old quote from G.K. Chesterton, who said, this Christian ideal is not so much tried and found wanting, but difficult and found untried. It's not really that we'd look at the teachings of Jesus and go, okay, I'm going to give this a shot, live it out and discover it doesn't work. No, it's not that. It's more that we look at the teachings of Jesus and go, man, that's good stuff. That's a great idea for somebody else. and live life the way that we want to, and we leave it untried. Now, we've been trying to remedy this situation as a church, as a community, one small step at a time, by looking at Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount. And as I said earlier, Greg started us off 2 weeks ago by looking at the Beatitudes, where we talked about, as citizens of God's kingdom, we are called to live differently from the world. Rather than the world influencing the church, Jesus calls us to live in a way that transforms the community around us, where people look at us and say, man, they are different. There's something different about them, not to draw attention to ourselves, but to draw attention to God. And today we're going to continue that in Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 26. This is what it says. You've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. And anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in dangers of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. Murder, anger, not particular fun subjects to talk about on a Sunday morning. How we treat each other when things aren't exactly going smoothly, but man, it's a great place for us to start. I don't know if anything exposes our failure to be the light of the world as much as the fact that sometimes attack mode, it comes more natural to us than that in the way of forgiveness and peace and reconciliation. Even when we're working with brothers and sisters in Christ, people of our same faith, all that to say that what we're talking about today is important. And I think today's text is actually really simple. I see three basic truths and then one clear call to obedience. So let's get to work. First thing that Jesus clearly says here is not murdering is not enough. Not murdering is not enough. Not killing people unjustly. It's a good start, but it's not enough. We're talking about the sixth commandment from the Ten Commandments. How many of you have heard of the Ten Commandments? Yeah, we're talking about number six, the big one, do not murder. And Jesus says that you have heard that it was said, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. And then Jesus adds on to it. He says, but I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. If you call someone raca, you are going to court. If you call someone fool, you are in danger of hell. Jesus is turning it up a little bit, isn't he? He's amping it up. And Jesus, he's not critiquing the Old Testament law at all. In fact, he is more critiquing the view of the law at the time. You see, the traditional view in Jesus' time is the law says, don't murder. If you break this law, this rule, you're going to be in trouble with God. But if you keep the law, you and God will be at peace. That was the traditional view. And for the most part, it's the view of today. We go, well, duh, don't kill people. If you don't kill someone, if you don't take someone out, you're righteous, you and God are good then. That's the traditional view. And Jesus looks at it and says, no. Just because you don't kill someone doesn't make you righteous. Not only can you not kill someone, but you can't be angry at a brother or sister. Because God's judgment in this command is not only in the act of murdering, but it's also in the attitude expressed in it. An attitude that is matched, by the way, whenever we wish someone dead or put someone in the loser category in our minds. An attitude that is matched when we speak words that basically put people on a lower level of humanity than ourselves. When we remove someone from the equation and no longer consider them as someone worthy of my attention or my effort. The text says, whenever you are angry, speaking evil words towards someone, and these three things, they're not different situations, by the way. Anger, raca, fool. It's the same idea, the same whole complex. Jesus is describing what happens. And I think it's important to know the details here. He doesn't say when you get angry. He says someone who is angry. There's a difference. Do you catch it? No one cannot get angry. We live in a broken world. Stuff is going to happen. Of course we're going to get angry. But the verb that Jesus is using for gets angry is when anger comes upon you and you let it stay there, harboring anger, if you will. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about what you do when you reach that point. Where do we go from here? Okay, so you are offended. Someone got in your way. Someone didn't give you what you thought they owed you. Now where do we go? And this is where Jesus really starts to draw the connection between murder and anger. A connection that is made pretty clear in this text. When we want something and someone gets in our way of that, so we remove them so that we can get what we want. Whatever that may be, between whatever it's a better life or more money, whatever it's going to be, I'm going to take you out. Whatever stands in my way between me and what I want. Anger is what we feel toward people who get in our way. Now, I need to point out that we usually don't go all the way and actually remove people from the world. At least I hope we don't. We're not actually going around killing people. At least we hopefully don't go around doing that. But the seeds of this behavior, they are present when we harbor resentment, when we hold on to bitterness, when we hold on to rage and contentment. We usually express this by words toward people, by what we say to them or about them. Jesus says, if you call someone raca, raca is this word that means like blockhead or empty head or fool or idiot or moron. Those are pretty good translations. You should see this guy. He's what an idiot. Don't worry about him. He's dumb. He's a fool. Fool is a similar word. It almost has a sense of a bad person or an immoral person. Oh, don't worry about this person. They're just a bad dude. Or don't worry about this girl. She's immoral. She's a fool. Recognize that when we put people in the idiot box, or the bad person box, we no longer regard them as someone with whom we will try to live with at peace. You kind of just decide in your heart and you cut them down to size as someone who is no longer worthy of love and respect and effort from you. Yeah, Jesus is right. The heart condition that renders murder as worthy of judgment is present in harboring anger, in contentment and in bitterness, in words meant to cut people down. So the first thing Jesus says is not murdering is not enough. It's a great place to start, but it's not enough. So what do we do in place of that? Well, here's the second part of that. Instead of harboring anger, we pursue peace. This is what Jesus tells us, and he gives us a couple of examples in this text. The first example Jesus gives us, he says, if you are at the altar, so picture this. You are in the act of worship, not unmuch like what we do here on a Sunday morning. You've made your way to Jerusalem, and you've stood in line, and you've got to the temple, and you've got to the place where God's presence is most clearly manifested in that time. And God is there, and you are worshiping in fullness of joy, and you're about to offer your gift at the altar. But then you think about that someone that you have something against, or that someone that has something against you. Leave your gift right there, it says. Go and be reconciled with that person. Go and try and have a conversation and make it right. And then come back and offer your gift. That's crazy, right? Imagine you waited in this line for like 3 hours. You finally got to the altar and you're like, oh man, you know what? There's a person that has a problem with me, or there's a person that I have a problem with. And Jesus says, you're not fine. Leave your gift there and go and reconcile with that person. And then come back. This is not even to mention the fact that Jesus is saying this. They are in Galilee. This is at least 80 miles from Jerusalem. So we're talking about a 4 or 5 day journey. You stood in line for hours. Jesus is telling you to go back 4 or 5 days and have a conversation, reconcile with that person. Hopefully it goes well. And then come back 4 or 5 days journey to Jerusalem. Stand in line again and then offer your gift. This is crazy, right? How many of you guys would do that? And Jesus is saying, you need to understand something. I'm not messing around with you because worship is compromised when reconciliation is not pursued. Because you cannot enjoy peace with God and not pursue peace with other people. Picture the cross. We got a cross right behind me. We're going to use this as an illustration. It's a great example of this, where we have this vertical beam that goes up and down, where we are reconciled to God. God has come and he has reconciled us to him. That's the main thing that happened when Jesus came. He came and he reconciled. He made us right with him. But then we have this horizontal beam, which could serve as an illustration to us. We don't only need reconciliation up and down, but we need it across as well. We can't enjoy peace with God without pursuing peace with other people. That's the first example that Jesus gives. And the second example Jesus gives, it's a little bit different, but in some ways it's a little bit more intense. You're on the way to court with someone. This is serious. They mean business. They plan on suing you. They plan on putting you in jail. Jesus says, try and make peace now. Don't wait till later. It might be a bad verdict. You might not have the chance to make it right with them. Jesus is telling us here is where reconciliation is not won, where peace is not won, the full penalty will have to be paid. Jesus is saying a person who pursues these things. Now, I don't think Jesus is trying to be exhaustive here. I think he's just given a couple of examples, but he gives these examples and they cover such a wide spectrum. He says if it's a friend or if it's an enemy, it doesn't matter who. Pursue peace. Doesn't matter who. Pursue peace. Church, are you with me? Jesus says always, it does not matter who. Pursue peace. Pursue reconciliation. The instructions is not never be angry. The instructions is pursue peace in all of your relationships. The Pharisees were content with don't murder. Don't kill anyone. And Jesus says that's not enough. Be a peace pursuer. Look at the commands in this text. It says, leave, go, be reconciled. And I want you to think about this for a minute because it took me an embarrassing amount of time this week to figure out what Jesus is trying to do here. I spent hours to go, okay, I have to have a good theology of anger. When is anger okay? When is it not? What's the line? When can I be on this side? When can I be on this side? When is anger okay? I tried to mark all the T's and dot all the I's this week, and Jesus was over in the corner going, hey, remember that person with whom you have a beef with a person there's animosity, with a person with whom there's content. Yeah? Start there. I didn't want to hear that this week. And I would assume many in this room don't want to hear that as well. Jesus cuts to the quick. He says, pursue peace. Do you want to be the type of person who is transformed at your core so that you live out when he says, do not murder? Do you? Do you? Here's where we start. Who has a beef with you? Who has animosity toward you? Who has conflict with you? Go make it right. Do what you can to make it right. That's what he says. Clear as day. Now, I would imagine that when Jesus is telling us to do this, to go make it right, to go have this difficult conversation, a lot of us in this room are like, I don't want to do that. Anybody? I don't know about you, but when I hear Jesus say this, I immediately jump to all the time I've tried this in the past and it has failed. Anybody else? Like, I've tried this before and it did not go well. I really wrestled with this week. I went to bat for us this week, and I was like, Jesus, why don't you just tell us how to do this? And I came to the conclusion that maybe the reason Jesus doesn't tell us how to do this is because Jesus knows that the how is not the obstacle we face, that our pride is the obstacle we face. And so Jesus tells us to go do this. Hebrews 12:12 tells us to make every effort to try and make peace. 2 Peter tells us something similar. He says, they must turn from evil and do good. They must seek peace and pursue it. Paul, in the book of Romans, he tells us, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live with peace with everyone. I could go on. There's tons of text about this, but I think you get the point. Here's the question this morning. And I don't want to ask it, but I have to, because it's my job. Who's the person for you? Who are you angry with? Who is standing between you and what you want? Or they did so in the past and you've held onto this grudge for so long. What relationships in your life need some attention, some urgent attention? Not urgent because something bad's going to happen if you don't, but urgent because God tells us to do this, because Jesus said make it a priority. Who is it for you? I want you to think about this, and we're going to come right back to this. But the third thing that comes out of this text, it's probably the easiest thing to miss, but I think it's the most important. The third thing we see in this text is we reconcile because we are reconciled. We pursue peace because God has pursued peace with us. Now, here's what I missed. I've read the Sermon on the Mount hundreds of times. I've read this hundreds of times, and this is what I missed. I didn't realize that Jesus' examples, when he talks about leaving the gift at the altar, going and making it right and coming back, when he talks about going and finding the person and making it right when they're on their way to judging you, I didn't realize when he gives us these examples, these aren't just hypothetical situations. It's almost as if he's telling the story that he's in the very process of living. He's not just describing what we are to do toward each other. He's talking about what he will have done for us. Pursue peace. Why? Because Jesus did it first. Think about it. Leave the place of God's immediate presence so you can find someone who has something against you to try and make it right, after which you go back to the place of God's immediate presence to worship in the fullness of gladness and joy. Find the person who is going to judge you and try and make it right, paying the full penalty when reconciliation is not received. Haven't we heard this story before? It's the story of the gospel, church. Don't miss this. Jesus is calling us to do something precisely that he is in the very process of doing. Matthew chapter 5 is an invitation and a summon to extend toward others the very same love and peace and grace that Jesus has extended toward us. So the immediate response is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. Who is it for you? Church, who is it for you? Who is the person in your life that needs some attention? Where will the pursuit of peace take you? I'm not going to make you say names out loud, but how many of you know who that person is? Let's be real with each other this morning. If Jesus is who he says he is, and he is who we say he is, then we have to do something. Because we cannot enjoy peace with God without pursuing peace with one another. And as I said earlier, we're going to do something a little different this morning. We're getting ready to enter into a time of communion where we are remembering what Jesus has done for us. That Jesus has come to earth to reconcile us, to make us right with him, to make us holy. And we remember back to him coming to the earth and dying for us, and this bread that we are getting ready to partake in, it represents his body, which was crushed for us, and this juice, which was poured out for us. We remember that. We remember him coming and dying so that we may have reconciliation with him, that we may have life with him. We recognize at this point that he has pursued peace with us so that we may pursue peace with one another. So what we're going to do this morning is we're getting ready to take communion. And there's a couple things that are going to happen. We're going to think about the things that Jesus has done for us. And for our remainder of our time after communion, we're going to have a time of worship where we enter into a time of worshiping with fullness of gladness and joy in his presence. And if there's something or someone getting in the way of you doing that, you need to go make that right, as Jesus said. Maybe you need to leave this room, you need to go have a conversation. Maybe that very person is in this room and you need to go make that right. But at this time, we are going to enter into this time of communion, remembering what Christ has done for us. He has pursued peace with us so that we can pursue peace with one another. Let's pray. Jesus, we need your help on this. We have so many excuses. So many obstacles, reasons why we shouldn't. We ask for wisdom. We ask for discernment. But more than anything, we ask for the courage to do this so we can be obedient to you, so that we can do what you've called us to do. Help us to never forget that you did it first, that you found us and you reconciled us and you brought us close by your Spirit and by your power and by your grace. Lord, at this time, we think about you coming to this world and dying for us so that we may have life in you, that you have pursued peace with us so that we may pursue peace with one another. And at this time, as we get ready to partake of communion, we recognize that your body, it was crushed for us, and that your blood, it was shed for us. And as we partake in communion, that we just remember you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.